The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 6, text number 26, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on August 5th, 2012, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Yato yato nishchalati
yato yato nishchalati
manaschanchalam ashtaram
manaschanchalam ashtaram
tatastato niyam yaitad
tatastato niyam yaitad
atman yeva visham nayet
atman yeva visham nayet.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. From wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady. But a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind and therefore the senses as well is called Goswami or Swami. And one who is controlled by the mind is called Godas or the servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesha, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is the way of bringing the senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapadakamunam Shri Gudun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Cha. These purports of Srila Prabhupada are full of so much transcendental knowledge, just overflowing with transcendental knowledge. One very nice point here: controlling the mind and controlling the senses, they're really the same thing. It's like in your car when you can control the steering wheel, you see. You control the car. So your mind is like the steering wheel and your senses are like the, you know, the wheels. And so if you have your mind under control, then your senses will automatically be controlled. So there's two terms in Sanskrit, Goswami and Godas. Go means the senses. Actually, the mind is listed as one of the senses also. The six senses that include the mind, it's sometimes stated. So the Goswami literally means the master of the senses, but it also means he who has mastered his mind. He is called a Goswami. And the opposite end of the coin, the other side of the coin, the Godas, the one who is a servant of his senses, the one who is a servant of his mind. That's the first point. The next point is, and I love this point, the Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. Now, there's a lot of deep meaning in that statement. There is a class of transcendentalists. They embrace the principle of denying the dualities, denying all variety. You see. But that's an artificial position. We want relationships. We want love. We want to see, to feel, to smell, to hear. We have this desire to do these sort of things. So one sense, the senses are false because the senses are a source of misery, you see. Then you can't really remain in that position because the senses want some engagement. Here the phrase sense happiness is utilized. We normally consider the senses to be sources of misery. Gratifying the senses is sources of misery. But here, the term, very interesting term, we rarely hear it used, but here the term sense happiness. We say sense enjoyment is bad, but now all of a sudden sense happiness is good. You see, see what I'm saying? We always say, sense enjoyment, that's maya, hence enjoyment. You have to give up sense enjoyment. Here we're talking about sense happiness. So there's a distinction between sense enjoyment and sense happiness. It's quite interesting that Prabhupada has used this term, sense happiness. It actually makes a lot of sense. What do you say? Because when the senses are used in the service of Rishikesha, which literally means, what does Rishik mean, Kirtan? The Sanskrit, Rishik, what it means? The senses. And Kesha means the master, you see. Or Isha. Rishik Isha. Isha means master or controller. So Rishik, the senses, and Rishikesha, the master of the senses. So in this material world, we're not the masters of our senses. We're the servants of our senses. The eye says, I want to see that. We say, okay. The tongue says, I want to taste that. We say, okay. We just serve our senses. That position of servitude to the senses puts us into misery because it locks us in the false conception that we are these bodies. So instead of being the servant of the senses, and thereby which causes sense misery or sense unhappiness, you see, if we become the master of our senses by engaging him in the service of the supreme master of the senses, Rishikesha, Krishna, then we achieve sense happiness. So we become the actual sense enjoyers then, you see. I can enjoy my senses if I engage them in Krishna's service. So we don't deny sense enjoyment. We teach people how to enjoy their senses. You want to enjoy your senses? Well, you're doing it wrong right now. The way you're trying to enjoy your senses is causing you misery. But if you will engage your senses in the service of Rishikesha, Krishna, the master of the senses, then you'll enjoy your senses. You can use your eyes to see the beautiful form of the Lord, your ears to hear the beautiful kirtan, use your hands to clap in the kirtan or play kartals, madanga, harmonium, you see. Use your feet to dance in the kirtan, you see. You can use your body, you can enjoy your body by engaging in Krishna's service, you see. That's true, bodily enjoyment, by engaging the body in the service of Krishna. So this is very profound. We usually don't hear Prabhupada talk about sense happiness. I don't recall any... See, Prabhupada is so amazing in his writing, You see little things pop out. He never says anywhere else except this one place. Maybe it's said somewhere else. One can search in the Veda base, sense happiness, and see if he uses it anywhere else besides this one purport. But that's an amazing concept, sense happiness. It sounds just the opposite of Krishna conscious philosophy. But actually, it's the perfection of Krishna conscious philosophy, sense happiness. And then Prabhupada then... strengthens the point even further. He says, in transcendental sense happiness. Is it? The senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesha. Are you with me? You following me? Okay, good. This is called engaging the senses. You see, the mind is a sense. And if we're hearing the class and our mind is going somewhere else, that means we're the servant of our mind. And that's called sense misery. But if we engage our mind in hearing the class very nicely, you see, and that's called engaging the mind in the service of Krishna, Rishikesha. And then we achieve mental happiness, sense happiness. So you want to have a happy mind? Then use your mind to hear the glories of Krishna. Use your mind to hear the transcendental teachings coming down from the great acharyas from India, and actually before India. India is only a temporary place. This our sampradaya goes out beyond India to Narad Muni and to Brahmanji, who doesn't live in India. Brahmanji has his own planet, Brahmaloka. The great acharyas have appeared in India, but not all of them. Some of them appear on other planets. You see? Brahmaji has a Brahmaloka planet. He's not an Indian. He's not Indian. But this knowledge on this planet has come historically in India, but now Prabhupada has changed them. You see? Prabhupada has changed the history. Formerly, Hinduism was only in India. Vedic culture was only in India. But now, the whole world is being engulfed by this flood of Hinduism or Vedic culture, you see. So now we can proceed to the next sentence. Serving Krishna with purified senses. Now another concept, you see. There was sense happiness. Transcendental sense happiness. And now there's purified senses. So there's two kinds of senses. There's impure senses and pure senses. Impure senses means when you engage the senses not in serving Krishna. That's impure senses, and that's misery. But you engage the senses in the service of who? Who? Rishikesha, that's right. And you engage the senses in the service of Rishikesha. They are called purified senses. And that activity of engaging the purified senses in the service of Krishna is called Krishna consciousness. That is the name of our movement. We are the Krishna consciousness movement. Because we are teaching people, this is not a religious cult, this is a scientific yoga process. We're training, doesn't matter, we can be a Baptist, a Presbyterian, a Catholic, a Muslim, you know, you can be a Shiite, a Sunni, a Sufi, you can be anything. And you can, because God is one. If you can learn how to engage your senses in the service of the master of the senses, whether you call him Allah or Rishikesha, it's the same principle. I'm not talking about blowing up buildings now. We're talking about bhakti. Surrendering yourself as a humble servant of God, you see. Becoming saintly, developing all saintly qualities. Of seeing how God is present in his abode and how he is manifest in the heart of all. Even a little ant, you see. A saintly person will respect even a little ant. Even the Christian saint, he was saying how the birds were his family members, you see. I think it was Saint Francis of Assisi. He was appreciating all the creatures were his family, brothers and sisters, you see. So he, therefore, he did not eat. He was vegetarian, you see. So, the next sentence. That is the way of bringing the senses under full control. It's interesting. You could just say bring the senses under control, but what is the difference between control and full control? I mean, if you really look at the, you go in depth to Prabhupada's purports and, you know, probably go, you know, try to go to a microscopic or sub-microscopic level analyzing them, it's really fascinating, intellectually stimulating. What is the difference between full control and control? Well, if it's not full control, what is it? Partial control. And if you have partial control of your senses, that means you have partial sense happiness and partial sense misery. You understand? You have partial sense happiness and partial sense misery if your senses are not fully controlled, they're only partially controlled. It's like the little boy, his friends were swimming in the lake. His friends were swimming in the lake. Come in, come in. You're welcome. Please join us. His friends were swimming in the lake. And he's sitting on the bank, and they're saying, "Come on in, Joey. The water's fine. Please come in." And little Joey is thinking, "Well, I don't know. Looks a little chilly." So he sticks his toes in and swishes them around a bit. "Well, I don't know." You see, so he's partially, finally he puts himself up to his ankles and then finally up to his knees, you see. But he's thinking, "Well, I don't know about going all the way, you know." So he's partially in the lake and he's partially still on the bank, you see. So this is called karma mishra bhakti. He takes the bhakti, but not completely. You think, "Well, a little bit of bhakti is good, but not too much bhakti." We hear this often. A little bhakti is good, but don't get too much into it, you see. Don't want to, you know, get wet all from head to toe, you know. A little bit up to the knees is okay, you see. So that means the senses are only partially under control. They're not fully under control. And that means you have sense happiness and sense misery. You have a mix of sense happiness and sense misery. To whatever degree you have actually brought your senses under control, to that degree you will experience sense happiness. And whatever degree you just say, "Well, I'm not quite ready yet. I think I'll stay a little bit in the world of sense gratification. Thank you." To that degree, sense misery is there. So you get to choose, you know. You get to go to the restaurant of consciousness and choose what mix do you want? Do you want pure happiness? Or do you want mixed happiness? What do you want? You come to the restaurant of consciousness. Consciousness restaurant. What do you want? Sit down and, "Okay, what do you want? What do we have on the menu? We got 10% Krishna consciousness, 20%, 30%. What do you want? What would you like to order today, sir?" You can have your pick. You're welcome in the restaurant. If you just want 1% Krishna, you're welcome. We love you. Come on. Everyone's welcome. You see? Even if you can't follow any of our religious principles, that's fine. You see? There's some people, they can't follow any of our principles. You see? But they're welcome to come. Everyone's welcome. Because we're all one spiritual family, isn't it? Isn't God the common father of all living beings? That means we're all one big family on this planet. We're all one family. We're already a family. We're all a big spiritual family, you see. It's like we have a website now, spiritualfamily.org. Inviting everyone to participate in our spiritual family, you see, because we're already a family. Now, since we're already a family, now let's be together. Why are we estranged from each other, you see? We're already a family, now let's be together, you see. So even if you can't fully embrace all the principles, that's all right. You're welcome with your 0.00001% Krishna consciousness. You're welcome. Because we know that once you get, by getting that experience of, "Wow, this 0.00001% Krishna consciousness is so ecstatic. Maybe I can be a little daring today and go to 0.00002% Krishna consciousness. And maybe someday I'll really come out of the closet and go all the way to 1% Krishna consciousness," you see. You see? So in this way, we encourage you, "Come on. Come on, little child, you can learn how to walk. Come on." You see, we're all little children learning how to walk. Prabhupada's our father, you see, our grandfather in this case. Come on. Come on, you can walk, you see. You can do it. You can take the pure bhakti. It's not as bad as you think. It really isn't. It isn't as bad as you think. Being fully dependent on God instead of you know, 99% on our own plans. You know, Draupadi, she was thinking, well, I'll be 50% on God and 50% on my own strength. You know the story in the Mahabharata. This poor woman, if you can imagine, she was lost in a gambling match. Oh, my God. Can you imagine losing your wife in a gambling match? And in those days, the woman, now, you know, now it's very common. They even have, an Indian woman who's in Playboy, appeared in Playboy magazine. There's no, the former chastity is no longer valued, you see. So formerly, the chastity of women was the most sacred thing. I mean, you don't mess with a woman's chastity. The chastity of a woman was like, in fact, women, chaste women had mystic powers by their chastity. By their chastity, they possessed mystic powers. There's a famous pastime when Gandhari, you see, she was very pure in her chastity. She was so humble, servant of her husband. If her husband was blind, she did not want to exceed her husband, so she wore a blindfold the whole life, just to not to be one up on her husband. Even though she had good eyes, she blindfolded herself. This was not, so she didn't want it to be one up on her husband. You see, this was her chastity. But by this chastity, she developed great, great mystic powers. That was Duryodhana, I think, yes. Duryodhana came, her son came, to become... He was going to give her invincibility by taking off the blindfold and gazing upon his body, his naked body. She was, by her vision, she was going to make every part of the body that she could see would become invincible, indestructible in battle. That's how powerful she became because of her chastity, you see. Just by her glance, she could make their son, his body, invincible in battle. That no arrow, you couldn't cut it, you couldn't injure him in any way. No, even the most powerful weapon couldn't hurt his body. That was the power of her glance, because she was a chaste woman, you see. So, Draupadi, she was a very, very chaste woman also. But she had been lost in a gambling match, if you can imagine, to the Kurus. And they were very wicked mentality. They went into this take away your chastity by stripping her naked in the assembly. So she was holding on to one, trying to control, holding on to her sari with one hand and calling to Krishna with the other hand. And she was helplessly being stripped. About to lose her sari, they were pulling it off. And she realized, what can I do? And she just put both hands to Krishna, and then Krishna gave her an unlimited sari so that they could never see her naked. So, in this way, there's a very good lesson to be learned, you see. When she was going 50%, taking shelter of Krishna 50%, she was losing it. She was helplessly being disrobed by the warriors, the enemy warriors, you see. But when she took complete shelter of Krishna, then she was totally protected. They couldn't touch her, you see. So if we go at 100% Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't be afraid. Actually become more powerful. When you become 100% Krishna conscious, you become unlimitedly powerful, actually. She had, just like she got an unlimited sari, one who is fully surrendered to Krishna, he is unlimitedly powerful. So there's no fear of, one should not be afraid of fully surrendering to Krishna. The more you surrender, the more you become spiritually powerful. So we have a few minutes left. I can ask if there's any questions.
Why do Krishna does not want us to enjoy in this world? Why Krishna does not want us to enjoy?
Krishna wants you to enjoy. Just like you're a parent. You have, how many kids do you have?
One son.
You want your son to be happy, don't you? Therefore, you made all facility for him at home to be happy. Now, what is your son's name? What is your name?
Akhilesh.
Akhilesh.
Yes. Okay, Akhilesh. Now, you're happy at home, right? You're happy living at home?
Not quite.
What did he say?
Not quite.
Not quite? Okay. So you need to teach him to chant Hare Krishna. Now, if you run away from home, do you think you'll be happy living on the street? What's he say?
He said, don't know.
Yeah. Okay, well, I can assure you that if you run away from home and you become a beggar on the street, you know, the people on this intersection holding a sign up, you know, please give me a dreaming of a, you know, a veggie burger or something like that. You know, you're not going to be very happy. I can assure you, you won't be happy standing on the street corner with a sign. You see? So, the point is this. God wants you to be happy. He's given you all facility, but you've run away from home. So what can you expect? You're a runaway. He's saying, God, why are you giving... It's like the son saying, Father, I ran away from home. Why aren't you giving me happiness? Why aren't you... My dear Father, it's your duty to see that I'm happy. I've run away from home. Why are you aren't making me happy here as a runaway on the streets of Austin? Oh, my dear son... I want you to be happy. That's why I'm asking you to please come home. You understand the point? Is it clear?
Yes.
Okay. Next point. Next question. Yeah.
Sometimes it's very easy to get into the illusion that you're enjoying yourself so much. How do we break away from that? Because we've read the matter, we've heard so many classes, we know so much instruction that this is the material world, it's just an illusion. But the illusion is so good sometimes that you really do enjoy it. How do you tell yourself that this is
wrong? It's a state called intoxication. We become intoxicated by material sense gratification. It's easy, especially in America, you know. This is the land of in America, it's very easy to get sucked into them. The Western countries where all this material facility is here, you know. Just like Prabhupada was on a plane one time, and it was complete fog. You couldn't see, zero visibility. But the plane landed just by the instruments. You couldn't see the runway, you couldn't see the airport. It was just like complete zero visibility, and the plane landed perfectly. Prabhupada said, this material world is a place of misery, but if there's any enjoyment, it's in America. So, it's honestly speaking, in America, it's difficult. It's a very difficult place to realize this material world is a place of misery. Especially if you're well situated, you have some good karma, got a good house, a good job, a good husband, a good car, you know, a sprinkler system. You know what I mean? You push a little button, your garage door opens, you have your nice new SUV, you back out, you know, and you come back and you just do a click. It's hard in America. It's sometimes difficult in America to remember this material world is a place of misery and to become sober. So, what to do? Well, you could pray like Kunti Devi for some misery to help you become sober. That's what she did. My dear Lord Krishna, please put me into more and more miserable situations. Because when I'm in misery, then I can really take shelter of you. And when I take shelter of you, I'm not going to have to see birth and death again. So, of course, another way is to read Prabhupada's books. To see through the eyes of Scripture. If you'd rather not have to have miseries to waken you up, which is called the school of hard knocks, you see, then just become more learned in Prabhupada's books. See everything through the eyes of Prabhupada's books. That's what we recommend. Not that we recommend you go out and pray for misery, although one could do that. I did that when I was in London and Krishna answered my prayer. Because I realized that's the way to get more bliss. But the recommended method for everyone is to read Prabhupada's books and to see everything through the eyes of Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada really pulls back the curtain of illusion so we can really see things as they are. We come, read Prabhupada's books, hear his lectures, you know, and hear from senior Vaishnavas in this way, you see. Don't see through the eyes, your material eyes. See through purified vision, by transcendental hearing and reading. Reading is a subtle form of hearing. See through that purified vision. Don't see through your material eyes, you see. But I guarantee you, in due course of time, it will become very easy to see this world as a place of misery as you get older. That youthful body that was so, that, you know, that felt so good, that did things so easily, now all of a sudden, you know, gradually, the eyes go bad, the ears go bad, the heart goes bad, the liver goes bad, the kidney goes bad, the joints go bad. It's just like, wow, one thing after another. That will happen in due course of time. So don't be illusioned to think your body and you're going to be young forever. I mean, I couldn't imagine when I was a 20-year-old brahmachari, you know, 23-year-old brahmachari, that someday I'd be, you know, sitting here in Austin, 60, going on 65, getting on Medicare, and, you know, and giving lectures on Bhagavad Gita. It's just inconceivable to me. I'd be a 65-year-old man. So when you're young, it's hard to believe you're going to be an old woman sometime, a 70-year-old woman. It's hard to believe. It's just like impossible, right? But actually, it's coming just around the corner, quicker than you think. So you should be very sober and realize that, you know, it's a dream state. This enjoyment is a dream state. I'm dreaming that I'm enjoying here, but actually it's not in a place of enjoyment. You have to be sober and realize that. And that will not... We're not telling you this to make you miserable. We're telling this to give you genuine happiness. Now you're enjoying artificial happiness, which is simply a perverted reflection of the unlimited happiness, ananda, spiritual happiness, you see. We're telling you this not to discourage you, make you feel bad. We're telling you this so you can actually increase that sense of happiness 1 billion times. You understand? We want you to enjoy, right now you're enjoying, but it's limited. We want you to enjoy unlimitedly, you see. We want to take that sense of happiness you have now and perfect it. We don't want to kill your happiness. We want to perfect your sense of happiness. And that's our Krishna consciousness movement. Does that help? Okay.
But
yes.
The enjoyment that we are thinking, isn't it just like a mirage?
Yes.
And we are thinking it's on the mental platform concoction that we are happy.
Yes.
If someone doesn't have a job, are they really happy?
Well, if they have enough money, they would be happy with
that. Even then, they are in anxiety.
Yeah, this material world, I know whether you have a job, you're in anxiety. If you don't have a job, you're in anxiety. That's my experience. You have a job, oh, I got to go to work, and I got to do this, and then it's so many hours. And if you don't have a job, oh, my, I'm going to pay my bills. It's like, now either way, it's like damned if you do and damned if you don't. This material world.
So where is the happiness?
It's not really happy. But if you realize this whole thing is not... If you realize this whole thing is just a drama happening out there on the screen of the material energy, and I'm actually situated here in the eternal energy of Krishna, reconnecting with my eternal relationship as his servitor and his transcendental pastimes, then all this external stuff just, you know, just fades away into some kind of a background scene, and you actually enter into your eternal identity as Krishna's servant, realizing, wow, I'm an eternal youth, actually. I'm not an aging, you know, woman or an aging man. I'm an eternal youth. I'm an eternal associate of God and his transcendental leelas. That's who I actually am. I just have to remember, get back to being who I actually are, you see. In this way, it becomes very enlivening. when you actually realize that you're not your body, that you're not a man, you're not a woman of this world, but you're an eternal spiritual being, an eternal associate of the Supreme Lord and His transcendental activities. And those activities are going on right now. They're just waiting for you. It's like God's waiting for you to come back and take up your position that you had before you made the mistake of coming into this world. It's like you ran away from home and your room is there at the house. The parents are waiting. When will little Johnny come home? You say, when will little Johnny come home? The room is there. His bed is there. His dresser drawer, his fire truck, it's all there waiting for him, you know. Come home, little Johnny. You see? So God is waiting for us. See, everything is there. Our eternal identities, they're all there waiting for us. It's called Swarupa in Sanskrit, one's actual original form. Your Swarupa is waiting for you. So just come back to it. By chanting Hare Krishna, you'll awaken your eternal identity. Not instantly, it's a gradual process. The first thing is to realize I'm not the body, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. You take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. You engage the regulated principles of devotional service, and then gradually, as you become purified of all the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, illusion, and envy, and then you become reawakened. Your eternal identity is a servant of Krishna and His transcendental lila. Anything else? Yes.
So if this material world is illusion, so was it present eternally just like Mahaprabhu, or was it created?
Did you hear?
The material world, if it is illusion, was it present eternally?
Okay, well, this material world is not false. There is an illusion here, but it's not that this world is false. It's real. I mean, this is real. Okay. But it's not what it appears to be. That's the illusion. This body is real. It's a fact. That I think I'm the body, that's an illusion. So that's the first point. And then you're saying,
was it present eternally, just like God?
It's described, and we learn from the Vedic wisdom, this material, there's a vast spiritual world with unlimited planets. And the topmost, and each planet has a form of Narayan that presides over that planet. And there's a supreme Narayan on the Goloka planet called Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, and that is Narayan in two arms, Krishna. The original Narayan is Krishna. And there's also a Narayan form called, who lies down. There's unlimited Narayan forms, but there's one who lies down. His name is Karandadakashai Vishnu. This Karandadakashai Vishnu, he lies down in a corner of the vast spiritual world, and he goes into a deep slumber called Yoga Nidra. And in that sleep, he is inhaling and he is exhaling. When he exhales, from his breathing, his mouth, and also from the pores of his skin, unlimited millions and billions of universes, material universes, emanate from his body. And in each and every one of these unlimited universes, he further expands himself as another form of Narayan called Garbhadakashai Vishnu. And that Garbhadakashai Vishnu lies down in the bottom half of that universe. From his perspiration comes out an ocean called the Garbhadak Ocean. And from his navel, he's lying there on the Garbhadak Ocean, the bottom half of the universe. From his navel, a lotus flower comes out, and Lord Brahma is born from that lotus flower. Each universe has its own Garbhadak Vishnu and its own Brahma, Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma then is given the task of filling in the universe with all the different gods and goddesses, all the planets. He fills it in. It's like he's the secondary engineer of the universe. So this whole thing goes on between the exhalation and the inhalation of Karandadakashai Vishnu, also known as Mahavishnu. When Mahavishnu or Karandadakashai Vishnu inhales, then all those universes are sucked back into him. They go into a dormant state. So this universe we see right now with a tremendous lifespan of 311 trillion 440 billion years is simply happening in between the exhalation and inhalation of Mahavishnu. And we learn from the Vedas it's halfway through. We're right at the halfway point right now. It's 155 trillion, 20 billion years since Mahavishnu exhaled. And he will be inhaling in another 155 trillion, 20 billion years. And the whole thing will be finished. All the living entities, they will not be destroyed. They're eternal. Those who have not become liberated, who are still entangled in sense desires, they will enter into a dormant state, a sleeping state within the body of Mahavishnu. And when he exhales, they will come out and pick up their karma where they left off. The karma will not be destroyed. And the karma of the living entities are not destroyed. Their karma is not destroyed. It will simply go into, sleeping pattern and then come out again when Mahavishnu exhales. So this material world is real, but it's not what it appears to be. That's why we say it's an illusion. And it's actually coming out of Mahavishnu's dream also. But the actual reality is we're not really part of this dream. We're just dreaming we're part of this dream. And we're actually eternal servants of God. And we realize, hey, I'm not this body. I'm actually eternal servant of Krishna. And we get free of that envious tendency of wanting to place ourselves as the Lord. Then at that very minute, we'll actually wake up and fully realize our eternal identity again in the spiritual world. And the beauty of it, this Krishna conscious movement, is we'll remember all of our activities we did here also. I remember when I was in Austin, and I joined the Krishna conscious movement. And I got started in the pathway, and now, wow, it really worked. Now I'm here. So our time is up. We have a special program tonight, so I'm in a little bit early. And we're so thankful that you all have come tonight. I really, really want myself and Guru Mata Vishnupriya Devi Dasi, we really very much appreciate that you've come. So we all thank you very much for coming tonight. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.